If you're into anything NASCAR and rock and roll, this is the perfect Radio Chatter podcast for you to download. Coming up here in just a bit, we'll talk with the president of the Michigan International Speedway, Roger Curtis, about the upcoming Firekeepers Casino 400 and the celebrity Grand Marshal who will signal the drivers to start their engines. But first, Jesse James Dupree from Jackal, of course, no stranger to rock and roll or NASCAR for that matter, or whiskey and bourbon. Man, I'd sampled a bunch of his wares over the weekend.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 4, 3, 2, 1, and liftoff.
This is Radio Chatter with WRIF's own Meltdown.
I'm one of these guys that thinks preparation is key. No matter what you do in life, with work, family, whatever. I mean, you don't just, you know, get up in the morning of a 7-day trip and just pack your bag in 2 minutes and walk out the door. You got to prepare a little bit. All right, well, I've done that before in the past. But listen, as far as work goes, preparation is key. And so when I knew I was going to talk to Jesse today from Jackal, I thought, you know what? I'll crank up some Jackal rock and roll. I'll ride my Harley-Davidson. And of course, I'll stop by the liquor store and try the original Jesse James American Outlaw Bourbon, which I did, which was fantastic, which I'll be buying more of in the future. There's no question about that. In the meantime, they've got a new record coming out on August 5th. Give a little listen to a little bit of the first single called Rally, and we'll connect with Jesse James Dupree today on Radio Chatter. Things in your world there, Jesse?
Yeah, everything could not be better. Waking up and taking this big a bite out of life fast every single day.
Now, before we started, you said you were actually on the Full Throttle property right now. Are you? How's things going with that? I know there was a big fire there in October. What's happening with the Full Throttle Saloon?
Yeah, last year was the 75th anniversary of the Full Throttle, of the rally that comes on up here. And right after the rally, you know, that was in August. And right after the rally in September, the Full Throttle Saloon, you know, 30 acres worth of off the hook, you know, burnt to the ground. And, $10 million worth of ashes, a lot of hurt feelings. And, you know, but you know what? Nobody was hurt. Nobody was killed. So we were blessed with that. And we're just going to look forward and we're going to rebuild.
And now, are you going to be doing another show this year?
Well, you know, we weren't able to commit to doing another show because we didn't know if we were going to rebuild.
Oh,
or
I
not.
See.
And but we are rebuilt. We're about 5 miles down the road from the original location. We left the original location up like it is because there's so many tourists that are coming by taking pictures of it because it's pretty ominous. The bridges and the tractor trailers and everything that are just melted down. So there's an incredible amount of tourists that are coming to. They go see Mount Rushmore. They go see Crazy Horse. They go to Deadwood and they come by and take pictures of the burned down Full Throttle. But we're about 5 miles down the road from the old Full Throttle. We moved to 600 acres. So we've got, RV camping and hookups. We got tent camping. We got cabins. We've got just an amazing setup. We got an Olympic-sized swimming pool meltdown.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, we got everything out here to host, you know, an incredible. This year we've got Seven Dust. We've got Zach Wild. We've got Crobot. We've got Waylon. We've got Jackal, of course. I mean, and we got Ted Nugent.
Yeah, I was going to say Nugent,
incredible.
Yeah. Now, is it gonna be a different name? I thought that I saw something about a different name on the. I don't know. Is it still gonna be Full Throttle, but an ode to the guy who started Sturgis, or?
Yeah, the campground. We're calling the campground the Pappy Hoyle Campground.
Gotcha. Okay.
But it's the full throttle. You know, it's the full throttle saloon and the Pappy Hill campground are all on the same, you know, on the same. And even if you don't ride a motorcycle, with that kind of lineup of bands that we've got this year, you know, don't miss the grand opening. And you know, we can have a camper ready for you. You don't even have to ride a motorcycle. Just get out here. Once you get on this property, you won't leave all week anyway. And we can have a camper sitting there waiting on you just to come walk, get in it, and go and just party your ass off. And we're right at the base of Bear Butte, this big Native American sacred mountain, and it's like the backdrop to this place, and you'll wake up to the most beautiful view in the Black Hills.
Yeah, that sounds cool. Now, when is the rally this year? What's the dates?
First full week of August.
Okay. That's the same thing every year.
Pretty much, yeah. And, you know, this year is the 76th anniversary, and, you know, it's going to be off the hook, and with it being the grand opening. And it's also, that same week, Jackal's releasing a brand new album.
Right.
And called Rally Co. And you got to check it out, man. It's the thickest, fattest sounding record we've ever done. And just some kick-ass, straight-up rock and roll. I'm proud of it. I know you hear every band, you know, blow all kind of smoke about their new albums, but, I'll let you judge for yourself. But the new single is available on iTunes and Amazon now, and I think we sent you a copy of it.
Yes, I got it. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I'm going to play it here in a couple minutes. But, track's called Rally. Really cool stuff from Jackal. They're going to be in town Friday, by the way, at Diesel Concert Lounge. You know, I tell people this sometimes. I'm not exactly sure if it's true, so I'll let you straighten this out. There's a couple things I wanted to know if they were true. First of all, I don't know if this is true or not, but could I have been the first person in the country to play the Lumberjack song?
Most definitely that's a good possibility because, I mean, you and I've been doing this since day one. I think we grew up in the industry together.
Well, I remember playing I Stand Alone, and I love that song. I'm like, this song is so great, and there was a lot of buzz about the band. So one day my boss came in, and he threw it to me, and he says, play something else off this CD. And so I listened to it, and of course I got to play a song with a chainsaw in it, and I started playing it, and the phone lines exploded. And I don't know if you remember the first time I met you, you played to a jam-packed bar. There's 2,000 people there, and the place is going crazy.
Yeah, well, I know that. I remember the record company calling because when it all started, because you just grabbed it on your own, and the record company called and said, "What the hell's going on? What's going on?" I said, "I don't know." And the next thing we found out that you grabbed a hold of the Lumberjack, and next thing it just took off. Because I Stand Alone was the first single, and it did really great. And then they were looking at going with Down on Me or something as the second single, but the Lumberjack kind of made its way in front of it,
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And I remember going up on stage, and you actually gave me the chainsaw. I was just watching the video with some of my neighbors here. You gave me the chainsaw you guys used in the video. And I think we auctioned it off for charity not that long after that. And you guys all signed it and stuff. It was pretty cool. And I also remember being up on stage that night in a packed bar, and you looked over at me. And first of all, you did your whole thing. Where's that little meltdown? Where's meltdown? So then I get up on stage, and you want me to moon the crowd with you, which I did. And then later on in the night, I don't know if I ever told you this story or not, but I met a girl, and she says, "Hey, nice butt." And I said, "Oh, thanks." I go, "Would you like to go out to dinner sometime?" And she said, "Well, I'm a vegetarian." And I said, "Well, I'm a vegetarian." And I dated her for 2.5 years.
Well, that true love is found in a Jackal show. People ask me all the time, they say, "Are you still doing the chainsaw?" And I'm like, "Well, does Angus still wear his little schoolboy outfit? does Kiss still wear their makeup? Does Iron Maiden carry Eddie around?"
Right.
I still play the chainsaw, and I'm proud to do it. It's something we've never shied away from. And, people, generally, the people that question, Jackal, we celebrate the fundamentals of rock and roll every single show. We just celebrate the basics and the fundamentals of rock. Two guitar, bass and drums, chainsaw, if you will, and it's a damn good time. And it's not even about coming to see the show. It's about coming to be part of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And people that get that come out, we have a great time. And after you bust your knuckles 40, 50 hours a week or more, it's an opportunity to blow it out, the right way. And people either get that or they don't. And generally, I find the people that don't understand that are the same people that have a hard time admitting that they masturbate, if you want to know the truth. Because, a Jackal show is just, it's about the celebrating the fundamentals of rock and roll.
Yeah, no question about that. Man, I'll tell you what. By the way, how many injuries do you think you've suffered from the chainsaw over the past 25 years?
Well, I've had 22 stitches.
Okay.
at, you know, at a couple of different times. And
mostly like knees and shins and stuff like that?
My knee and then my thumb. We were doing we were playing a big anniversary. We were actually out on tour with ZZ Top. And the Hard Rock Cafe was having a big anniversary, and they wanted us to come in and play a little private get-together that afternoon before the arena show. And so we went into the Hard Rock, and they had a huge birthday cake, and we played a couple of songs, and we broke into the Lumberjack, and then I was going to rip into the cake with the chainsaw. And somebody, they didn't have a proper barricade, and we were down at basically the same floor level as everybody else, and a guy just stepped right through the fencing they had up, and I threw my hand out just to tell him that he didn't come close to me, but I just wanted him to stay put. So I threw my hand out like, just no, stay put. And when I threw my left hand out, I was holding the chainsaw with my right hand, and it just kind of torqued up on me and popped me right at the base of the left thumb. Mm. I had 15 stitches from that, and then another time, I raised my knee up, raised my leg up. I just, in the moment, this is at my own knee. I'm like, ah! And I'll never forget, there were these two young guys that were up against the barricade, and it was so loud, and, you know, everybody's going crazy and stuff. But and of course, I'm bleeding, and we just kept jamming anyway. And I'll never forget, looking down and seeing these two young guys in the the front row up against the barricade, and I could just imagine Beavis and Butthead's voice in the coming out of their mouth going, "Look, he's cut himself. Wow, yeah, that's cool, yeah. He's bleeding. Wow, that's cool."
Now, is it truth or urban myth that when you guys got signed to a record deal, you jumped up on the table where executives were standing and started up your chainsaw and started carving into the table, and a guy at the table had a heart attack?
There was somebody that in the restaurant, it wasn't a person at the table I cut.
A restaurant, okay.
There was a person that ended up going to the emergency room for, thinking they were having a heart attack. And there was another person jumped over a bar to hide, because there's 200-something people in that restaurant, and they plastered against the back wall, scared to death. Somebody jumped over a bar and sprained their ankle. And it ended up, that afternoon cost me a little over $1 million. That was the most expensive lunch ever, and I didn't even eat. You know what? Nobody got killed on that one either. So I'd do it again, to be honest with you, because it was definitely an introduction for Jackal into the industry, because word traveled around everywhere that we were out to raise some hell. So it's something, when you're especially coming out of the gate with a brand new rock band, and you're so full of piss and vinegar and ready to, walk through brick walls. And I'll be honest with you, Meltdown, we still are that way. I mean, this band hits the stage every night, and it's the equivalent of Madison Square Gardens, and we don't care where we are, we treat every gig the same, and we also realize that we're blessed to do what we do. And, I got the same sumbitches with me forever,
Yeah.
We actually get along and laugh and spend time with each other when we're not playing. It's how rare and how blessed are we with that,
Yeah. By the way, before I forget about this, I didn't even have this written down in my notes, but I drank a bottle of your bourbon this weekend just as show prep. You know what I'm saying?
The Jesse James bourbon is doing great. We just hit 100,000 cases.
Really?
In a little over 3 years. And if you hit 100,000 cases in 5 years, you're doing something. So we did. We're really proud of the Jesse James bourbon, and we got the honey bourbon and the spice bourbon, and you can find it in Michigan. I mean, it's up there, and they've been doing a really good job. The Great Lakes distribution guys have been, putting it out there for me, and we also got the Full Throttle Slim Moonshine. And if you haven't tried that, that's good stuff too.
I'll tell you what, I got to be honest, Jesse. I'm a bourbon guy, and I thought it was fantastic. I told my neighbors, because they weren't around this weekend, Memorial Day weekend. I was kind of hanging by myself, and I drank a little bit of it, and I drank a little bit more and a little bit more. Now it's gone, and I told them, I said, man, yeah, I'm gonna have to buy this next weekend again, because we like to sit around and drink our bourbon. But man, it was really, really good. I'm totally honest.
Thank you. No, thank you. And I'll be honest with you. I mean, it is good bourbon. It's a 10-year-old that we blend with a 3-year-old. And, so it doesn't have that wince on the backside that say a lot of the older brands have. Some people may like that wince, but I prefer something a little smoother. And it's not as sweet as, say, Crown Royal.
Right.
And, it's really, I'm very proud of it. And if you're a bourbon drinker, you can seriously put it over over the rocks and drink it. I mean, it's really great. And the honey bourbon and the spice bourbon, the spice is more like a Captain Morgan on steroids. You know, I like to say that the Jesse James spice bourbon will make you fall to your knees and beg for forgiveness. It'll make a Captain Morgan fall to his knees and beg for forgiveness. It's good stuff.
No, really good stuff, man. I was super impressed. And I'll tell you what, I got it at the store the other day, and it was like $16 for a fifth, and I'm like, you can't beat that anywhere.
Yeah, you can't afford not to drink it. I mean, you know, when I grew up, you know, I'll be honest with you, I used to wear a Jack Daniel's T-shirt and a Lynyrd Skynyrd T-shirt, and if you had a problem with it, I'd fist fight you.
Right.
And but over the years, those brands, you know, some of these older brands have been, you know, they mean everything to everybody now. You know, they're a white tablecloth drink, they're an urban drink, they're everything to everybody, and you got to take a second mortgage out to go buy a bottle of it. and so I wanted to put out a bourbon that, you know, that people that bust their knuckles every day to work hard. I wanted to put out a working man's bourbon, you know, and something that you can be playing. The logo and everything's really great. I mean, a lot of people wearing the Jesse James bourbon shirt. And, you know, and I share a name with a famous outlaw. I'm not running around saying this is my bourbon even. I mean, it's a tribute to the outlaw, you know, the original Jesse James, an outlaw that's in everybody that likes to ride Harley Davidsons or go to NASCAR races or rock and roll concerts. You know, it belongs to those people. And, you know, I just want it to be what it means to you, you know, as something that you can enjoy drinking every weekend and like I say, throw down.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I'm a big Jack guy myself, and I'm going to definitely be buying some more of yours to swill down with some of my friends. Hey, real fast, I want to get your response to the AC/DC thing. First of all, did the thought ever cross your mind to even attempt to try out for AC/DC? And what do you think of Axl's job that he's done?
Well, Brian is one of my dearest friends, you know, and I've been on the phone, you know, periodically over the last, you know, couple of months with him. And, you know, even this past weekend, you know, he and I were, you know, on the cell phone together. But
how's he doing?
You know, he's bummed out. I mean, Brian's not a quitter, you know, and for him to seriously, you know, say, throw a red flag up and say, look, I've got a problem here. You know, he don't play. And, you can count that it was very serious. And I was just with him on their last show. I was actually out in Missouri with him during the last show that he played with him. And, and I could tell he was disoriented then just as far as, you know, because his ears, you know, were bothering him. And so, I mean, my heart is you know, sunk down whenever all this went down. I mean, I'm friends with all the guys, so I prefer to kind of stay out of their business. And I didn't really appreciate, you know, Jim Brewer or any of these other guys talking outside the circle. You know, I think Brian's perfectly capable of speaking for himself when he gets ready to talk about it, you know. But, you know, it's, you know, the problem with Axl, it's not about whether or not he can sing or not. I mean, actually, he's obviously validated himself. He don't have nothing to prove to anybody. I mean, the guy's got 10 million records with Guns N' Roses. And, you know, I think the biggest thing that's kind of tripped everybody out is just Axl, just, you know, what Axl stands for and his image and his brand of rock is just so different from the brand of AC/DC rock, you know. And I think that's the bigger issue people have had with him singing with them. And, you know, because the band just stands for, you know, something different, you know. And, but, I mean, who's to say what's going to happen? I mean, my hope and prayer is that Brian gets back with him. And it's funny, to answer your question about me, I mean, I was humbled the fact that people would, you know, automatically reach out and such. And, you know, and Brian's always joked as if anything ever happened to him, you know, he wanted me to go take the spot or whatever. But that's, you know, just being him joking. But let's be honest, Brian Johnson's Brian Johnson. And,
right.
You know, I was talking to him the other day, you know, we were talking about just, you know, what somebody stepping into his shoes, you know, and I was just reminding him, you know, Shoot the Thrill, Hell's Bells, you know, songs like that, those are not just songs to sing. Those are mountains to climb. I mean, vocally, for a singer, those are mountains to climb. And, you know, and those are the ones that, you know, that you know, if you listen, you know, those are the ones that even Axl, you know, struggling with. You know, the Bon Scott stuff, I think he does a pretty damn good job of it. But, you know, but when you get into Shoot the Thrills and that kind of stuff, I mean, those are, I mean, you're blacking out when you're singing those because they're up there and you bring them from your nuts, you know. And those are not just songs to sing. They're mountains to climb. And, you know, Axl's a very privileged individual to be able to sing them with that band. And, you know, again, I'm friends with all of them, but my heart, you know, goes out to Brian, and I hope that, you know, my hope is that he gets, you know, gets the treatment that he's now seeking to get, and that he gets back on stage with the guys where he belongs.
Yeah, they were a big influence on you when you were growing up.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, and even more so, you know, not just the band, you know, which has obviously been an influence, but Brian as an individual has been such an influence on me. I mean, you know, he comes, Meltdown, you've been around guys, you know, as celebrities your whole life, you know, in this business. And, you know, and you've seen the guys that are a-holes and you've seen the guys that are cool, you know.
Right.
And Brian, you know, Brian could buy everybody tenfold if he wanted to financially. I mean, the guy's, you know, the number one selling record of all time, you know, Back in Black. I mean, think about it. You know, and, but yeah, he comes and stays at my house. You know, there's no bodyguards. You know, I keep his green mint jellies in the refrigerator. I mean, he's just a real guy, you know. And I'll go to his house and hang. And, you know, he's the most humble, down-to-earth guy. And what an example. You know, there's not a better example of somebody that, you know, that has put everything in perspective. He knows he's blessed to have been able to do what he does. And I've just always tried to, you know, that is probably just as much of an influence on me as anything with those guys, is just the way that, you know, that he carries himself.
How cool is it that you can call Brian Johnson a friend of yours?
You know, I won't lie to you. I mean, you know, it, when the phone rings and, hey, Jesse, my son, you know, and I think to myself, you know, I'm still that, you know, I go back to when I was 15 years old and I camped out for two nights to, you know, to get tickets for Back in Black, you know, I do have to stop every now and then and just bring myself back to reality, because I mean, it's really cool that, I've been able, not just him, I mean, you know, hell, I was on the phone with Nugent the other day, and you know, if you'd have told me, again, back when I was a teenager, if you'd have told me that I would have Ted Nugent's phone number and that we'd be on the phone, you know, talking, because we got him out in Sturgis, and we were talking about some side stuff that we want to do while he's out here, and just the fact that being able to have my dreams come true, and, you know, again, it doesn't go past me every day that how fortunate I've been to be able to do these things, and, you know, I don't want to sound hokey about it, but it's just, you know, let's face it, you know this as good as anybody. I'm just qualified to pour concrete. So, you know, it's a blessing to do what I do.
Well, I'm not technically qualified to pour concrete because some guys just poured some for me, you know, last year, but that's another story for another time. But, hey, how many bikes do you have right now?
You know, I had a couple of bikes, you know, because I'd never gotten rid of the first one I had, you know, which was, you know, a 94-headed Softail. And I got T-boned on that thing about 3 years ago. A guy hit me and damn near killed me. And messed me up pretty bad. And I couldn't bear to get rid of it. And even though it got totaled out, the Harley-Davidson dealership in Kansas City, Worth Harley-Davidson, actually went ahead and rebuilt it for me. So I still have that one. And then I have a Street Glide that I ride, you know, which is the, you know, because I won't lie to you, that Heritage Softail I got wrecked on, even though they rebuilt it, it still rides sideways.
Little dog tracking?
It got crushed. But I still love seeing it in the garage. And I take it out every now and then, just mess around with it. But it's like riding an old antique anyway. But fun.
Well, you know me, I'm not that big, and it's like, I'm not a bagger type of guy, but I'll tell you what, in 2007, I was driving next to somebody, I was riding, and I'm like, I had my Softail Standard, and I looked over, and this guy's riding a brand new Street Glide. I'd never really seen one before, and in 2009, I bought my first Street Glide, the one I have right now, and I love that Street Glide, man.
You know, they're sporty, you know, they're still cool, you know, but yet they're you can go try ride on them, you know, and I try to ride, you know, Roman and I, you know, go ride out on tour, you know, as much as it'll allow. And, you know, some years we'll get 15,000+ miles, you know, going from show to show, no trailer behind the bus. We get out and do it rain or shine or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's sincere from us. I mean, we do love riding. And I'm in Sturgis now. I fly to Minneapolis, Minnesota at 6:00 in the morning tomorrow, and then catch a connection on into Cleveland. And then they pick me up at the Cleveland airport and drive me about an hour and a half down to Sandusky. And then Thursday morning, I'll get up at 9:30 in the morning. I'm going to marry a couple at the Harley-Davidson dealership.
Nice.
And get on the motorcycle. I'll sign some bourbon bottles and take pictures and such. And then we'll get on the motorcycles and we'll do about a 4-hour charity motorcycle ride that day for pancreatic cancer. And then we'll stop and eat lunch somewhere and have a good time. And then I make it back and we're kicking off Ohio Bike Week down there. And it's the kind of stuff I get to do all throughout the summer, and we get as much riding in as we possibly can. But I'm excited about getting back into the Detroit area. It's been a while. We've been playing up the road in Flint.
Right.
And we do that, annually. And since it's so close to Detroit, it's kind of prohibited us from playing down there. But things are going to work out perfect this year for us to come through and play. And I hear this new room, is it over in Chesterfield? Is that right?
Yeah, Chesterfield. Yeah, I heard you talking to the Doc Rock about that. And it's a cool room, man. I'm looking forward to getting up there myself. What time are you going on stage?
Whenever the intro rolls.
Okay.
I don't know. But they got some good opening bands for us, and it'll be a big night. And it's been a while since we've been in Detroit, so I'm expecting that place to pack out.
Yeah, it's going to be cool.
Everybody come on out and throw down.
I'm looking forward to it. And, I'm going to have to make a trek up to Chesterfield, which is on the opposite side of the planet that I live on, just to see you and say hello and stuff. And, this is going to sound really bizarre. I don't have one picture with you. I don't know why that is, but we'll have to see if we can remedy that on Friday night.
Well, it's on purpose because I made a policy a long time ago that I never take pictures of people that are better looking than me.
Then we should have a lot of pictures. My wife keeps giving me the heart. I brought home your bottle the other day and it's white and stuff. She goes, oh, those matches his white boots he had on that magazine several years ago, which she still has, which she hides from me. I don't know where it is in the house.
Oh, the Playgirl magazine.
Yeah.
I call that was the point and giggle issue.
That's hysterical.
It's hard to believe that's been as long ago as it has, but I can say I did it, and it just is what it is. But they shot me naked on. But when they did that shoot, I was at the Long Beach Arena where Jim Morrison went to jail for exposing himself there. And so I thought it'd be appropriate to kind of recreate that.
Really?
That's really the only reason why I even agreed to do it was because they agreed to shoot me naked. They wanted to shoot me naked, and I said, look, I'm not the kind of guy a girl wants to see laying on a bearskin rug. you can come in because I was going to jail for indecent exposure when I was just moving the crowd all the time.
Yeah.
And so they hit me up, and I said, at first I said no, and then I said, I'll do it. Come shoot me at Long Beach Arena where Jim Morrison got naked and got arrested, and I'll do the same thing. Of course, I did get arrested, but I can say I did it.
Yeah, there you go. Well, Jesse, it's been good catching up with you here. The new single is called Rally. The new record drops on August 5th, and of course, that's when things will be up and cranked up again at the Full Throttle Saloon. You got your show coming up Thursday to kick off Bike Weekend Sandusky, and of course, Friday right here in the Motor City at Diesel Concert Lounge. So it's going to be a busy weekend, Jackal, and I guess you never let the grass grow under your feet anyway, so...
No, absolutely not. And people check out, I've been trying to do a better job at Jesse James Dupree's Instagram, posting some of the stuff about Insurgents. So, go check that out. And then also, we got all of our tour dates and stuff on the Jackal website. And you can also pre-order the new Jackal record. And they throw a couple of extra little freebies into the package when they mail it out. But the record comes out August the 5th. And check out that new single. Crank that bitch up right now.
Jesse, you're the man. Thanks, brother.
See you about that.
Rally, 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 rally
single from Jackal, track called Railing. Like Jesse said, you can pre-order their CD, which drops on August 5th through iTunes and their website and the whole thing like that. Check them out on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. Jesse James Dupree, got to thank him once again for coming on the Radio Chatter podcast. And that show coming up at Diesel Friday in Detroit and Chesterfield is going to be really cool. And I wish I could make the Bike Week thing down there and Sandusky on Thursday, but just can't do it. Can't twist my schedule around enough to get down there and check him out. In the meantime, got to thank him. Man, I'll tell you what, I've known him for almost 25 years. It seems crazy to think, but yeah, it's been a long time since the first time I met Jesse James Dupree. I've known Roger Curtis for quite a while as well, not 25 years, and he's the president of the Michigan International Speedway, and they've got a cool race coming up again. Of course, two races every single year in the Irish Hills of Brooklyn, Michigan. Beautiful place to get down there in mid-Michigan. And Roger Curtis joins us right here on Radio Chatter. Of course, a busy, busy weekend coming up, eh, Roger?
It's coming up fast. Fire Keepers Casino 400 kicks off our season. We've got two big weekends this year, but this will be the first one here June 10, 11, and 12, and really looking forward to it.
Now, because of a leap year or whatever the case is, the second race got pushed back a little bit, didn't it?
Well, it was the leap year that caused us to go off Father's Day in June.
Right.
It was, candidly, it was the Olympics that caused us to move back the Pure Michigan 400 a couple weeks to help NBC with their coverage. So next year, 2017, we're back on Father's Day in June and back in our traditional mid-August date. So we'll be okay. This is kind of a weird year, but that's all right. It's still going to be an awesome time with the partying and the racing out here.
All right. Well, because of that, I have to watch the second race in Michigan down in Florida or on a Disney cruise, wherever I'll be, because I scheduled my vacation. See what happens? I'll tell you.
I know. It stinks, doesn't it?
So anyway, so we got the Fire Keepers Casino 400 coming up on June 12th. And I guess the thing that everybody's talking about, maybe you can explain this to the layperson out there as far as racing fans go, is this whole aero package thing.
Well, yeah, it's real simple. The NASCAR has done a great job of making the cars harder to drive. It's not the engineers that are in control anymore. It's the drivers, and that's made for some great racing this year. I mean, way better than the last couple of years, and probably better than what I can remember. We've had some great finishes. We've had a lot of lead changes, a lot of passing, and it's hard for the drivers to drive going into the corners, especially what we're going to see here at MIS being so high speed. Cars going to be loose. I'm sure it's going to be warm here in a few weeks. So, and what NASCAR has done now is they've actually made it even harder. So they've taken more downforce off, messed around with the car. So I think we're going to see a lot of cautions, going to see a lot of spins, a lot of lead changes, a lot of action for sure.
Now it says here that the spoiler's been shortened by an inch from 3.5 to 2.5. The splitter's been reduced to 2 inches, and they resized the deck fin to match the spoiler. And by doing all of this stuff, they predict it's going to be a little bit more difficult for the drivers to drive.
Yeah, you wanted to talk about it in layman's terms, Meltdown, and now you're getting into all the specs. But yeah, that's exactly what they did to make it harder to drive. And that's great. The drivers want that. They want the ability back with them. And, I mean, they love their crew chiefs. They love their teams and all the aeronautical and mechanical engineers that the teams employ now. But at the end of the day, it's the race car driver working with that car, and they want it easier to pass. They got rid of all this quote-unquote dirty air that used to make it difficult to get up to another car and pass it. So, and then the asphalt here, the pavement that we did back in 2012 just continues to age and cure, which helps the racing as well. Goodyear's bringing tires that really wear out, which makes the racing better. So all the way around, I'm really excited for this year with the on-track product. And then, as you know, it's so much more than a race anymore. It's a festival, and you've got the camping, cooking out, sitting around the campfire, having some cold ones. You got the fan plaza, all the activities up there. And of course, now our second year, you've got music with Kalora, and this year featuring some great alt rock, some classic alt rock, I guess, if you will, on the June weekend. So it's so much more than just a race. It's a festival now.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you do forgive my ignorance, do you do Kalora both June and August, or is it just for the first race?
No, we do. We do Calor. We started it last year. We do it on Friday and Saturday night. Starts around 4 or 5 o'clock when the on-track activities are done, and we crank up the music. So this year for June, we've got Third Eye Blind, Group Love, Fits in the Tantrums, L. King, The Neighborhood, Andy Grammer, and some others. August, Pure Michigan 400 Race Weekend will be focused on country, but got some rock, alt-rock stuff going on in June, and excited about that. But there's all kinds of stuff in Calora too. Like, we've got go-karts, arcade games. We added paintball this year, life-size beer pong, life-size battle shots, battleship games. So really, really cool music festival going on at the same time as you've got NASCAR.
Now, do some of the drivers ever make an appearance out there and partake in the activities?
Yeah, we had Michael Waltrip came out last year and actually sang a song, which
that's probably not a yeah that's probably not, not no I can imagine
no not good
I can imagine how that was. So anyways, have you visited any other tracks? I mean, I'm sure you do, but have you visited any other this year already?
Yeah, I was down in Daytona. Went out to Auto Club, since it's kind of our sister track, to see what the new rules package we were talking about, what that would do out there. And they had an absolutely fantastic race. So that's what we knew. We had something really good that was brewing for the Firekeepers Casino 400 here in a couple weeks. And, yeah, it's good to go out and kind of benchmark yourself of, you know, how are we doing, whether it's flipping the hamburgers, the trams, the concerts, you know, and everything. You just, you go out and take a look at what the other tracks are doing. And of course, you know, you steal the good ideas and are happy when you're doing things the right way.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of getting at. Do you find that some of the tracks might be stealing some of your ideas?
Yeah, I mean, we all steal from each other, as we should. I mean, because ultimately it ups our game, and that's good for the fans. We're all trying to do, make a great experience and make sure that the value's there and attracts new fans at the same time. And Calora certainly is one of those things that's gotten on everyone's radar screen because it is so unique to have. I mean, almost every track has like a free pre-race concert or a value-add concert, which we used to have, you know, on Saturday night. We would have a band or two play and be kind of a thank you and just go stand in the field for a couple of hours. But now to put on 8-9 bands over the course of 2 nights and all the other activities that we've thrown in the mix, now we've got a dance music foam and paint party afterwards after Calora that people can go to and keep the party going till 3-4 o'clock in the morning. That's all very, very unique to the NASCAR experience. So yeah, a lot of people watching us on that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's always fun when you get out to the track out there in Brooklyn. You know, I know it's, we've talked about this before, that you know, people don't realize that this track does more than just the three days on the weekend in June and August. You guys are actually open for business, I suppose, for lack of a better term, like 250 days a year or something like that. There's always something going on there.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. It's everything from wedding receptions to we had Consumers Energy had a big meeting with a bunch of their contractors down here the other night and gave them some pace car rides. We have the Boys and Girls High School Cross Country Championships out here.
Man.
We have days you can bring your car and drive it yourself. So everything.
I've ridden my motorcycle around there in the past. That's always fun.
Yeah, very. I mean, with 2 wheels versus 4, I mean, God bless you, Meltdown.
I want to get my bicycle out there. That's one of my goals, so we'll see what happens. I want to see how many times I can go around that track before I pass out.
Well, I have to say, we have the largest bike ride in the state of Michigan. Starts in Traverse City, ends here. It's all for Make-A-Wish, and that's coming up here in July. And it's a great event. All the proceeds, all the entries, we have teams and sponsors, goes to Make-A-Wish Michigan, great cause, and that happens here. It's still taking people who want to sign up. That takes place in July.
And that's a bicycle or that's a motorcycle?
That's bicycle.
Bicycle, so, wow.
Yeah, kind of like a Tour de France for a Tour de Make-A-Wish in Pure Michigan kind of thing. So,
How long is
really
that
cool.
ride?
starts in Traverse City. Now, you don't have to do the whole thing. We actually have a lot of people that will jump on the last segment, so they get to end and ride around the track at MIS and end up at the start-finish line. But there's a good number that start at Traverse City, make their way down. It takes a couple of days, but it is from a number of riders. It's the largest bicycle event in the state of Michigan.
I'll have to get some info on that. Maybe I'll have to join those guys there this year. That sounds like fun. So anyways, the Firekeepers Casino 400 happened in the weekend of June 12th, and I'll be out there as usual with the hospitality tent for Kevin Harvick, and I look forward to seeing you. Now, what are any dignitaries coming out there? Gentlemen, start your engines, or I said drivers, I suppose, nowadays. Can you name off any of those guys yet?
So our Grand Marshal is Misha Tate. I believe she's bantamweight class champion in UFC, and she's awesome.
She's definitely fantastic. She's lighter than I am, for sure.
She's tied in with Kevin Harvick. Actually, he has an agency that manages her and a couple of the other UFC fighters. So
that's right.
I know he's super excited to have her. So it's going to be great.
Yeah, she's under his managerial umbrella, right? Is that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what other kind of dignitaries are you expecting that day?
You know, we're actually, believe it or not, we're going to have a lot of the tribal members coming out from Firekeepers.
Oh, cool.
And that's really cool. They're going to do what they call a smudge ceremony, which it's a very sacred Native American ceremony that blesses and cleanses where they do the smudging. It uses they use smoke sage, and it smells great. It's very cool. And they're actually going to do the start finish line and the media center and their suite. So it's pretty cool that the Native Americans are getting so involved in the event here and bringing some of their traditions to NASCAR's got a lot of traditions as well, so it's going to be a really cool event when you merge those two.
Hey, final thing. I was talking to you earlier about some of the tracks that you've visited in the past as far as this year with NASCAR and stuff. What about like some local tracks? I was in Grand Rapids over the weekend a couple weeks ago, and I wanted to go check out that I-96 Speedway, and of course, we got Flat Rock right here in Michigan. Do you ever go to any of the smaller tracks?
I need to. I really do, because I love short track racing. It's what I grew up on in Indiana. I mean, for years as a kid, that's all I went to. And we've got some great tracks throughout the entire state here. And I just, with three kids who are very active, it seems like, and unfortunately none of them are racers right now, but so I don't get to the racetrack. But I really would like to, because we have some great shows that these local tracks put on. And we do talk to them a lot. I mean, they have some... They come out here and we all meet and talk about how the racing's going in the state and how we can help each other. So they're great people, and I hope all your listeners certainly go out and support them.
Yeah, no doubt. I love going out and checking out the small tracks, watching the sunset, and watching some late model racing and modifieds and stuff like that. It's always a lot of fun. So, well, looking forward to the Firekeepers Casino 400. That's a great place to go too, by the way.
Yeah,
that,
it is.
That casino is awesome, like we were just talking about. So, and if you get a chance, definitely check that out. But, Roger, we'll see you around the track. Hopefully, you'll take a swing by Kevin Harvick's hospitality tent there.
Absolutely. I bet we'll get Misha out there for you, too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I want to arm wrestle with her or something. I don't know. I follow her on Instagram, so she might know who I am because I like all of her pictures. No, I'm just kidding.
Stalker. Oh, no.
She'll be like, I know you.
She'll beat you up for it, too. So watch yourself.
Yeah, she probably will. Roger, good luck. We'll see you in a couple weeks.
All right, take care. Thanks for having me.
There you go, Roger Curtis and Jesse James Dupree today right here on Radio Chatter. A little bit longer one than usual, but hey, got a lot of stuff in, got a lot of content. Hope you guys enjoyed it. As always, I always invite you guys to check out a past Radio Chatter podcast and follow me on Twitter at MeltdownWRIF, and feel free to email me anytime, meltdown@wraf.com. And thanks so much for checking out Radio Chatter right here on the worldwide interweb.